In the Joshua passage we will soon hear, we meet the people of Israel at a stressful time. After being led out of Egypt by Moses, the people of Israel have been wandering through the desert, and they are now camped along the east bank of the Jordan River, at the very edge of the land that God promised them. In Deuteronomy 31, Moses, the leader who had been with the people for a very long time, tells those people that he will not be crossing the Jordan River with them. Moses then summons Joshua, and he becomes the new leader, the one who will take the people into the land that God has promised them. In the opening passage of Joshua that you will soon hear, a lot is being asked of him, including leading the people to a new home, following the law of Moses, and displaying faith, courage, and strength throughout it all. A lot is being asked. A lot is asked of us too. We are called to display faith, courage, and strength in our lives. And if you ask what is one of the amazing teachers of how to live with courage and strength, the answer would be Jesus. In the Mark passage, we will soon hear, Jesus is with his disciples, and after hearing Jesus predict his own death, the disciples respond in an intriguing way. They argue with one another about who is the greatest among them. At this point, Jesus sat down to put the disciples back in their place and tells them that in order to be first, they have to be willing to be last. Contrary to societal notions of the nature of greatness, God's kingdom ushers in a new world order which radically reverses the normative standards and declares a different definition of discipleship. Service to others. Jesus then engages the disciples in a living story by using a child and having the child sit with Jesus. Oh, that's kind of cute, having a child sit with Jesus, but children in that day and age aren't seen as cute. They're seen as outsiders. They're seen as people being on the margins. So therefore, what Jesus did is radical. Jesus made it clear to all that in his world, he associated himself with the meek and the mild, the humble and the lonely, and the marginalized. Jesus was invested in doing life-changing ministry on the margins. I'll be the first to admit that it's hard to dedicate our lives to others and to welcome and care for those who are outcast and marginalized, ignored and left out. But we are reminded that God provides us strength and courage for the journey, for the fight, for the daily living, and that we are called to make better tomorrows for all the world's children.
Our first reading is from the book of Joshua, chapter 1, verses 1 through 9. After the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord spoke to Joshua, son of Nun, Moses' assistant, saying, "My servant Moses is dead. Now proceed to cross the Jordan, you and all this people, into the land that I am giving to them, to the Israelites. Every place that the sole of your foot will tread upon, I have given to you, as I promised to Moses. From the wilderness and the Lebanon as far as the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites to the great sea in the west shall be your territory. No one shall be able to stand against you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will not fail you or forsake you. Be strong and courageous, for you shall put this people in possession of the land that I swore to their ancestors to give them. Only be strong and very courageous, being careful to act in accordance with all the law that my servant Moses commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right hand or to the left, so that you may be successful wherever you go. This book of the law shall not depart out of your mouth. You shall meditate on it day and night, so that you may be careful to act in accordance with all that is written in it. For then you shall make your way prosperous, and then you shall be successful. I hereby command you, be strong and courageous. Do not be frightened or dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. And the second reading is from the book of Mark, chapter 9, verses 30 through 37. They went on from there and passed through Galilee. He did not want anyone to know it, for he was teaching his disciples, saying to them, "The Son of Man is to be betrayed into human hands, and they will kill him. And 3 days after being killed, he will rise again." But they did not understand what he was saying and were afraid to ask him. Then they came to Capernaum, and when he was in the house, he asked them, "What were you arguing about on the way?" But they were silent, for on the way they had argued with one another who was the greatest. He sat down, called the 12, and said to them, "Whoever wants to be first must be last of all and servant of all." Then he took a little child and put it among them, and taking it in his arms, he said to them, "Whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me. And whoever welcomes me welcomes not me, but the one who sent me." May God bless our understanding of this reading.
Tomorrow's world. I grew up hearing those words. You see, my dad was an educator, retired now. His first job out of graduate school was to work as a history teacher in Riverhead, Long Island. And my dad was an idealist, 23, 24, and with another teacher decided to start an after-school club called Tomorrow's World. Because my dad and his colleague thought that we were called to make a difference in tomorrow's world, to do something. You see, it was the late 1960s. There was a lot going on in terms of race relations and women's equality and so much more. And so this club began. And I love it because I've grown up hearing stories about the kids in tomorrow's world who are now grown up and really weren't that much younger than my dad. And they got together and they had retreats and they did fun things and getting to know you, but really the purpose was to go out into the community. So they worked at a daycare taking care of children. And my dad just told me last week that he thinks they had the first recycling program in Riverhead out of my parents' garage. Tomorrow's world. We need to think about it. We need to care about it. My parents opened their house to these young high school kids, and by doing that said, "You matter. You matter for building tomorrow's world." Jesus, in that passage that we just heard, is saying, "You matter, small child. Even though society treats you like an outcast and puts you on the margins, you matter," and welcomes a child in his midst. And says to the disciples, "Disciples, I don't know what's wrong with you and why you're arguing about who is the greatest. You just don't get it." Jesus welcomed the child and said, "You matter." And that's what we're called to do as people of faith. The time is now. We can live in our own little bubbles and we can make all the excuses we want. Yeah, I know, our lives are busy, we have our own struggles. The time is now to make a difference in the world. There are children who are hurting in Glastonbury and in Hartford and in Manchester and around the world. We can make all the excuses we want, but the call is clear. If we are to be faithful people, then we are to be courageous and strong and welcome those that others won't welcome. That's tough. If you turn on the news, sometimes we get news fatigue, right? You know, too many negative stories, too many horrifying pictures, so it's easy to put on our blinders and pretend we just live in this happy, amazing world, which we do live in an amazing world. But the crisis in Syria, I'll be the first to admit that I probably didn't pay enough attention to what was going on in the world. And so my first reaction when I see a lot of sadness on the news is to look for the hope, to look for the good. Because it's got to be out there, right? So I found this story about a young man in Syria. Well, he's actually not a man. He's 14, a young teenager, Kusei. At age 10, he decided he wanted to be a playwright. You know why he wanted to be a playwright? So that he could bring peace to his country. So for 4 years, he thought about, how can I write these plays? But then bombs started going off. His home was destroyed. He was forced to leave his hometown and move in with aunts where it was safer and they could afford the rent. But still, this dream of bringing peace to a broken land. And in his new hometown, he happened to come across a center that was for children and youth, where they taught life skills, where they taught art, and where they said, you matter. You need to be that voice of peace in your hurting country. And so guess what? He wrote these plays, and then they happened. His first production was 2 years ago, and all children were in it. And you know whose stories they told but the children's? Stories of sadness, but stories of hope. When you ask Hussein what he was trying to do, he said, I'm trying to bring hope for the world, for tomorrow. Peace to a broken land. Following the children, following the youth, there are so many. Yeah, we can put on our blinders, we can make excuses, but the time is now. And the time is now to tell their stories. I found this amazing nonprofit called there you go, Giving Children Hope. The executive director is sitting in the middle with the hat. I know he looks about 15, but he is the executive director. His name is Seth Lawrence. And when asked why he does what he does, makes little money but cares about the children of the world, he said 25 years ago he was on a mission trip with his dad to Vietnam, caring for the orphans and the poor of the poor. And his dad, a journalist, told him as they were boarding the plane to come home to their comfortable life, there are stories to tell, and you need to tell them. Friends, there are lots of stories to tell, and it is our responsibility and our duty to tell them. Many of you know when I was in college, I had a really hard freshman year. I wasn't happy to be at school. I'm the youngest of four. I grew up in Durham, Connecticut, a small town with lots of cows and, you know, little rural America. And then I went to Worcester, Massachusetts, went to Clark University. And for those of you who know where Clark is, it's not in the best neighborhood. And so it was a little bit of culture shock for me, and Clark has an open campus, so people in and out. And so I decided my spring semester, in order to kind of get out of the Clark bubble, the college bubble, I would start a children's after-school program at one of the elementary schools. Now, when I say these kids were rough, I mean they were rough. 28 of them on the first day, most of them, actually one out of the 28, had actually seen a play and knew what a play was. The rest just needed somewhere to go and probably were forced to come to the after-school theater program. Their behavior was, oh, and I was 19 and thought I could do this and idealist and I was going to change the world. We did Charlie and the Chocolate Factory as our first play, and you know, the Oompa Loompas. So all the little kids, the shortest kids of these third through fifth graders, were Oompa Loompas in their hot pink shirts and their bright blue shorts and those striped socks, you know, trying to give you a picture of this. And Tiani, yep, so Tiani, far left. You see her, it's kind of a devilish smile in that picture, but she was like the most well-behaved child you would ever meet, and she always was excited to come to children's theater, always excited, always pretty, you know, well put together. Doesn't look so well put together in that picture, but brushed hair and nice clothes. Then one day she came, and her clothes were dirty. She smelled a little bit. Her hair, she had this great head of hair, was kind of all disheveled, and she was crying. And I said, Tiani, what's wrong? Because she was like my kid I counted on to be excited, to be right there with me. I said, Tiani, what's wrong? She said, we had to move out of our apartment last night. I spent last night in a homeless shelter. My mommy tells me maybe tomorrow will be better. I got chills just saying that. Maybe tomorrow will be better. What was that, 15, 17 years ago? I have never forgotten her sweet little face and those words. It is our responsibility to make tomorrow better for our children. And if we don't do that, then we're not being faithful people. I know, that sounds hard. But it is our responsibility as faithful Christians to be courageous, to be strong, and to know that the time is now. The children need us. The children in our community, the children in Hartford and Bloomfield, the children in Syria and Worcester, and the list goes on. Friends, there are stories to tell. There are words to share. You matter. And the time is now.